This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. With the congressional Christmas break looming, there's been a lot happening on Capitol Hill this week. A little later on, we'll hear from Congressman Ted Poe on the impartiality of the Mueller investigation. Also, retired General Jerry Boykin will join Tony to talk about a judge's decision to block the Trump administration move to roll back Obama-era social engineering in the military. But first, the House and Senate have been working this week to reconcile the two different versions of the tax reform bills, and the Justice Department has launched a formal investigation into Planned Parenthood over its sale of fetal tissue. With us now is Representative Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee to talk about it.
Marsha, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much. It is so good to be with you. And I have to tell you, we were so encouraged last week to know that the Department of Justice and the FBI are taking up these criminal referrals that I gave them, presented to them, based on the work that we did at the Select Committee investigating what was happening with Planned Parenthood and the sale of the baby body parts and fetal tissues.
Well, this it was a groundbreaking investigation. I mean, it took you about a year as your committee went painstakingly through this process, looking at the information, hearing testimony, and there was a lot of criticism that your select committee, this panel, was a witch hunt, that it was politically motivated. But the evidence was pretty strong. And from your work, the Senate then picked it up, and the Senate made the same recommendation to the Department of Justice.
That is correct. The Senate did carry forward with some of our findings, and you know they also made referral to, based on the work that they did, the add to that they did. They DOJ has responded to them on their investigation also. And the good thing is it shows when the House does its job, when the Senate does its job, and we make these criminal referrals. I now have 15 criminal referrals. The Senate has a criminal referral, and the FBI is conducting their investigation. DOJ is conducting their investigation. And hopefully, from all of this work that we have done, we're going to find out what is going on. Did Planned Parenthood, by contracting with these third-party entities, did they break the law? Did the third-party entities benefit? Did they pass some of that benefit to Planned Parenthood? We'll begin to get to the bottom of that.
Marsha, I have to say that, you know, there's a lot of congressional hearings and investigations. We, you know, we saw it on Benghazi. We've seen, Fast and Furious. We've seen all these different things over the last decade. I could be wrong here. I don't know. But this appears to me to be one of the few that's actually led to the Department of Justice actually taking action that might lead to holding people accountable.
You're correct about that. And that is why we were so pleased. We were so painstakingly careful as the committee members. And the credit has to be shared with them and with our staff. We were painstakingly careful in how we went about doing our subpoenas, handling the request for additional information, how we held our hearings, the witnesses that came to the hearings, the way we went through the accounting process with a forensic accountant, the way we sought the advice of medical ethicists, and of those that are medical researchers. And, you know, Tony, what they all instructed us was to be very precise in the discovery work that we did and to pass it forward in a manner that would be appropriate for requesting an action per whatever the finding was. And I was very encouraged to learn that the state referral, the criminal referral we did in New Mexico, a couple of months ago, the judge ruled that that trial can move forward. This is so significant because it deals with the way the consent forms were written and what women were told or not told about what was going to happen once they aborted that baby. And I will tell you, I think New Mexico Right to Life and the group that is handling that lawsuit on behalf of one of these post-abortive women, I think that they will win that lawsuit. But it was such an honor for me and very humbling indeed to be able to deliver this body of work that is going to be one of the most significant bodies of work that has been done in support of our pro-life positions.
Without question. In my mind, without question. My guest, Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn, represents the 7th Congressional District of Tennessee, and she just stepped off the House floor. Marsha, I know you guys have been voting, and I want to transition now to the issue that's kind of really before us this week, and that is the negotiations between the House and the Senate on the tax reform bill. What can you tell us from the House perspective? How are things looking?
The things are looking really well. Our goal is to make certain that this keeps it to middle class tax relief focus, that everybody sees a tax reduction, and that our small business families, those small business owners, are going to see a reduction in their taxes. And we want to make certain that the mandate, the individual mandate to purchase Obamacare, goes away. This is something that has caused a tremendous financial burden to so many of our families. And, you know, when you look at my state of Tennessee, last year we had 122,000 families that had to pay the penalty because they could not afford to buy the Obamacare product. So they paid the penalty to the IRS. Some of those penalties are as high as $2,500, depending on how many people are in your family. Now, Tony, here's the terrible thing that is really so awful about this. Out of those 122,000 families that had to pay that penalty, 100,000 of those families had incomes, joint household incomes less than $50,000, and they were forced to pay money to the IRS. So we have to get this off the books.
With no question about it, and we're very, very close. Marsha Blackburn, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. And again, kudos to you for your work on the Select Investigative Committee that's brought us to this point where maybe we'll see Planned Parenthood brought to justice.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for the support. Take care. Bye-bye.
If you want to find out more about Marsha Blackburn, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues of the day. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with a look at some trouble in the Mueller investigation.
This Christmas season, give with purpose, a gift that protects life, marriage, and religious liberty. For over 33 years, Family Research Council has worked tirelessly to ensure that religious liberty is defended, that human life at all stages is protected, and that family values are promoted in the public square. If you give between now and December 31st to FRC, your gift will be doubled. Give with purpose this Christmas season. Text FRC to 444-999. FRC wishes you and your family a Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. On Wednesday of this week, the House Judiciary Committee held a hearing on the ongoing concerns with the Mueller special counsel investigation, as well as who is seeing what private information during the investigation. Joining Tony to discuss the hearing was Texas Congressman Ted Poe, who serves on the House Judiciary Committee.
Welcome back, Congressman, to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Always good to talk to you.
Well, I was watching the hearing today, and I'm going to get to the subject. You had asked several questions regarding the release of confidential information that is gathered on American citizens, and this information being released or used improperly, wanting to know if the Department of Justice has actually prosecuted any of those individuals that has misused this information.
That's right. The information I'm talking about and I asked questions about had to do with the NSA gathering information and violation of the Constitution, in my opinion, emails on Americans, and then under this Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, continuing to seize information that's supposed to be gathered on terrorists. They gather, they say, incidentally, information on Americans, communications, emails, texts, and they use that against Americans. Now, they say they're operating within the law. I disagree. I think it violates the Constitution because no Fourth Amendment warrant is being used to gather that information on Americans. But the bottom line was, I want to know how many times this has been done. Give us a number. And we asked this first several years ago, and the Defense Department, intelligence agencies have all stonewalled that, given us that information, how many times this has occurred, the search of Americans' data. And even today, they say they can't give us that information. And we are going to have a vote on whether to reauthorize the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. And, you know, I'm one that says we can't reauthorize it till we know how many times it's been used against Americans. So that was the tenor of my questions. And, of course, they continue to say, we don't know. We don't have any idea. And I found that was...
How is it that they... I mean, how is it that they don't know?
Well, I think they do know. I think that they can find out with a... Really, they have the data. They can make a search. Their IT experts can make a search and figure that out, how many times they have flagged an American in that massive data they have. Even the Washington Post said that 90% of that data that's gathered, supposed to be against foreign terrorists, 90% of it's on somebody else, like Americans. So I wanted to know how the exact amount of times it's done, has been done, and they won't tell us. He didn't tell us, said he didn't know. That's been taken. The spy agencies have continued to say they don't have that information. They can't give it to us. I think they can.
So how this works, folks, is that when they're looking, tracking, investigating a foreign terrorist, if there is any communication with an American or American gets crossed up in that communication, they can get that information on that American. Now, it's incidental to the main investigation. And then that individual, if that information is presented, if I'm correct, Congressman Poe, that's masked so that people won't know who that individual is. But wasn't that at the center of part of this controversy with the Obama administration going out that they were unmasking some of these American citizens involved with the Trump campaign and what they thought was communication with foreign agents?
Exactly. That's all classified information. And we've heard of the leaks of information, who these people were, Americans that have been unmasked and their identities have been shown. And remember, some of these, the vast majority of these seizures on Americans may not have anything to do with terrorism. They may be communicating something else, and then they query this whole database on how many times this person's name, American, comes up, and then they look at that. But yes, the unmasking is a felony. Wanted to know how many of those people have been prosecuted as well. And, of course, the investigation is still ongoing. That's basically what he said.
Congressman Ted Poe, I want to shift gears a little bit to another aspect of the hearing that got a lot of attention based upon some text messages, information that was turned over on, last night turned over to the committee. Two FBI agents who were assigned to the investigation into the alleged collusion between President Donald Trump's campaign and Russia exchanged text messages back and forth, to take some of the more mild text message, referring to the future president as an idiot. Clearly expressing support for Hillary Clinton. This was a focus of a lot of the exchange today, was it not?
Absolutely. And it was the Republicans that were bringing this up. An independent counsel is appointed because current federal agencies, Justice Department, FBI, have a conflict of interest or there is a perception of a conflict of interest, and that's why Mueller was appointed. And he is supposed to be independent, and those text messages show that the people who are helping the so-called independent investigator, Mueller, have a strong bias against President Trump. Those are two FBI agents, and the texts, I think, now are public, and there's a lot of them. They show just really a contempt and a hatred for the president. And they're involved in, supposed to be the independent folks, looking into this whole Russian Trump investigation, shows absolutely that they are not independent. They are biased. And they gave, some of them gave contributions to Hillary Clinton's campaign. And it was pointed out because here's what we're doing. We have an independent counsel. They got FBI agents working with the so-called independent counsel, and these folks are obviously biased. It taints the investigation of Mueller, in my opinion. And that's why we, or many members of the Judiciary Committee, said, look, because of this, Mueller should not be the independent counsel. We need somebody else to be the independent counsel. And that's where all of this was leading to.
There are so many holdovers and so many people. Well, I know there was at least eight political appointees from the Obama administration that are now embedded. They went over to classified, and then who knows how many others that were hired during the Obama regime. And so there's reason, I think, to be suspect, even though I think the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, is doing a great job with his core team. There's a lot of stuff that has to be undone. Congressman Ted Poe, thanks so much for joining us and giving us the update on today's hearing.
And thank you. And then I just want to be clear there. I'm suspicious of the independence of the counsel. I'm not talking about Jeff Sessions and the rest of the Justice Department, just the independent counsel.
You can learn more about Ted Poe when you visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available. You can donate when you visit TonyPerkins.com. We'll be back with retired Army General Jerry Boykin right after the break.
What is the purpose of the military? To fight and win wars. The Obama administration abandoned this basic, common sense principle by allowing those who identify as transgender to serve. Thankfully, the Trump administration has announced plans to stop this policy from negatively affecting the military's true purpose. Recently, Representative Vicky Hartzler has championed this cause in Congress. Go to frc.org/speakers to watch Congresswoman Hartzler share congressional insight on this issue.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Earlier this year, President Trump fulfilled his promise to get rid of Obama-era social engineering in the military. But this week, a federal judge ruled that the Pentagon must allow the recruitment of transgendered Americans to the military. Joining Tony to discuss this decision is FRC's Executive Vice President, retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin.
General, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, the president made very clear when he was running as a candidate that he was going to return our military to what it should be.
He certainly did. He gave us that pledge as we sat there at the Westin Hotel with him in October of 2016.
So you and I were not surprised in July when he made the announcement that we were not going to do, our military was not going to do this transgender thing.
No, I would say it was not just a matter of not being surprised, but we were expecting it.
So you have a few folks that file suit in a federal court saying that he can't do that, that transgendered persons have a right to serve in our nation's military. And so you have a federal judge, Judge Colleen Coller-Cotel, issuing an order saying, no, you got to go forward with it. The Trump administration appealing to get a stay on that decision until, they could appeal. The appeal could work its way out. She again said no. There is another expedited request appeal by the Trump administration to put this on hold until they can fully adjudicate it in court. Bottom line, what is the impact that this could have on our nation's military?
Well, let me start by saying there's so many things wrong with what you just said. The first one is, this is judicial tyranny. This is absolute judicial tyranny. Donald Trump was elected fairly, so this is tyranny by an unelected lower court official. And I find that just incredible. The second thing, though, is nobody has the right to serve in the military. There is no constitutional right. It is a privilege to be able to serve in the military. The military has always had policies that restricted some people from serving, but it was because their service was either jeopardized them personally right. or jeopardized their teammates if they had certain physical or health issues associated with them. And then finally, your question, what's the impact of this? You said it. Just like Douglas MacArthur did in 1963 at the West Point Mess Hall. He said, your mission is fixed, determined, inviolable. It's to win the nation's wars. That has not changed. Everything that the Congress does and everything the President does should be done with regards to our military with a view towards how this makes us more capable of doing that. What we're seeing now is that we're seeing another social experiment thrust into our military, which will eat up training time, will take time that they should be preparing to win the nation's wars, and it will be hours of training time.
But, General, as we've looked at it, 23,000 personnel are going to have to be trained by the end of the year. That's resources that are going to have to be reallocated. I mean, you just can't mm-hmm. create this out mm-hmm. of thin air. That takes time away. And the point you were making is that this is not happening in a vacuum. This is on top of other training that mm-hmm. the Obama administration made the military go into. How do you deal with homosexuals? How do you deal with sexual abuse? How do you deal with, all of these
women
issues.
Women in the infantry. Yeah, no, this is added on top of what we're already doing on these social experiments.
So the practical effect of that, what is it? Can we say that this has had an impact?
Oh, listen, just watch the news. How many ships have collided in the last 2 years? Just in the last 2 years, how many ships have collided at sea? How many airplanes have crashed? Just look at the impact of using our training time for these social experiments instead of doing those things that help us to succeed in war and keep our people alive. You're seeing this. Even the Navy is now saying that a lot of these ship collisions now are based on a lack of training, a lack of preparation. And look at those sailors that were taken in January 2016, that were taken by the Iranians, and within 3 hours they're apologizing to the Iranians and thanking them for their hospitality. You know, the code of conduct does not permit that, but guess what? They didn't get the code of conduct. Why? Because they were in a classroom learning how to integrate homosexuals and transgenders and women into the infantry and a variety of other things that contributed nothing to their preparation for going into harm's way.
And again, President Trump saw this. This was communicated by current and former military leaders to the president. The cost of this was evaluated by him, upwards of, $7 billion over a 10-year period. And he said, we're not going to do this.
Right.
But yet now we have a federal judge that is dictating the policy of our nation's mm-hmm. military.
That's why I say it's judicial tyranny. I mean, I never thought I'd see the day when an unelected lower court judge could have that kind of authority. This is about America's security. You know, that's the mission, again, of the military, is to win our wars. This is about national security, and you have a monumental decision here that is being made by an unelected lower court judge that impacts on our national security. But more importantly, you got a son that's about to go in the military, don't
right.
you?
Right, I do.
Do you and
I mentioned
like every
that,
other mom and dad.
And when I talked to the president about this on Monday in the Oval Office, and I told him, I said, I'm concerned about this for a variety of reasons. One is the impact it has on our nation's military, but the fact that my son is taking the oath on Friday.
Yeah. And don't you think we owe it to him? I know you do. I know because you and I have talked about it.
But we owe it to him and everybody else just like him to give them the best preparation by training them properly and equipping them properly and not wasting their time on these nonsensical things that contribute nothing to the readiness of our military.
And if this is allowed to continue, what is actually going to happen? And you and I have talked about this as well, because every time you and I go somewhere and we speak, we have parents that come up to us and say, should I allow my son, my daughter to join the military given what is taking place? And I think if we continue down this path, more and more God-fearing, patriotic Americans are not going to serve in our nation's military.
And then what do you have, Tony? What you have is you have mercenaries. I mean, if you lose the element of faith in the ranks of our military, I don't know where it could wind up. But you don't want a military where there's not some foundation of faith among a good number of those soldiers, sailors, airmen, or Marines. You need faith in there.
George Washington made that very clear. That is the moral compass.
That's exactly right. And if you don't have that, look, bad things happen anyhow. But you're talking about some really bad things. Right. When you don't have at least some foundation of faith, and you've got people that are trained, that are well-armed, my gosh, think of where this could go. And so that's not what we need. We've got to restore our military readiness. And part of that is stopping this very dangerous policy that this judge has ruled on.
All right, General Jerry Boykin, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Okay, good to be with you.
If you want to find out more about General Boykin, just head on over to tonyperkins.com and follow the links. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. And if you find the weekend edition of Washington Watch informative and useful, we'd encourage you to tell your friends about Washington Watch. You can help us reach more people with this radio ministry by supporting our efforts and heading over to tonyperkins.com and clicking on the donate button. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkel, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.